We're to bring out God's goodness in situations. We're to make things just a little bit sweeter, just a little more flavorful, just a little bit better because of our presence. I'm going to put my mother-in-law on the spot right here because you are a great example of salt. She has a neighbor, and her name is Betty. We call her Auntie Betty. Auntie Betty lost her husband quite some time ago. How many years ago, Mom? Maybe 20? Only 10 years ago. Okay, doesn't matter. 10 years ago is a long time. And Ma has been, you know, consistently brings meals over to Auntie Betty, watches over her, helps her with her finances. Lately, she's been driving her around, and as of late, she's helping her transition into 24-hour care. And Ma, you have just been a great inspiration as a salt to Auntie Betty. Another example is a woman that I won't say her name because I didn't ask her if I could tell the story, but it's a great story. This woman went to the hospital on Christmas Eve. Some of you may know the story. You may know exactly who I'm talking about. Went Christmas Eve, and she was met by a nurse who was very, grumpy, very gruff, not very nice, poor bedside manner, was not afraid to tell her that she hated Christmas. And so this woman, in her very gentle way and very caring way, spoke to this woman. And when it was time to leave, this nurse just wanted to give her a hug. Just a hug. 180-degree turn of this nurse's attitude. Colossians 4 says, "Let your conversation be always full of grace, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how to answer everyone." Salt is the woman who brings out the goodness of God in every situation. She makes a gray day sunny. She has an empathetic ear. Salt is the man who, whether in difficult times or in good times, always makes things better, encourages the downcast, helps the needy, strengthens the weak, lightens people's burdens. One of the best ways that I can tell if I'm being salty in my world is by asking a simple, single question. And I already asked it. Am I missed? Am I missed? Do people miss me when I'm gone? Salty people are always so full of grace, so full of blessings to other people, that when they are gone and they are missing, that people miss them. But there is a warning that Jesus issues that comes along with salt. And that he says, don't lose your flavor. Why? Because it is not possible to salt the earth without possessing the flavor of salt. And therefore, it is not possible to get that salty flavor without having spent time in the salt mines. The obvious fact is that a person simply cannot spread what he does not have. And Jesus calls this person useless, good for nothing. Now, I don't know about you. I don't want to be good for nothing in the kingdom of God, in God's eyes. I want to be useful. I want to be salty. And so to do that, we have to develop and nurture that close personal relationship with the Father. Spend time with him in prayer, in the Word. You hear, we say that all the time up here, almost ad nauseum. You cannot overspend time with God. Get to know him. Get to know his heart, his eyes, his feet, his hands, his character. Spend time with him. Develop that relationship with him. Get salty by spending time in the salt mines. If you go to a Chinese restaurant down the street here, it is not possible to leave some of those restaurants enjoying good company, good food, without absorbing some of the flavors of that restaurant in your clothing. I have gone into the car, and you're outside and you don't even notice it, but you get into these closed quarters and you think, who opened the leftover box? It's closed. I smell it in Leanne's hair sometimes. It gets in everything. And the fact of the matter is, the longer you're in there, the stronger the smell gets, the greater the intensity, the longer it lasts, and it's no different with God. The longer we dwell in the presence of God, the more we will absorb him into our lives. Now, as bad as it is to lose the flavor of God, there's something equally as bad, and that is hiding the flavor of God, which is why Jesus calls us to minister as lights. And in that calling, Jesus essentially says, don't hide your light, but let it shine. I'll read verse 14 again. You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor does anyone light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on the lampstand. And it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. What's it mean to live as lights? The scriptures are full of analogies or metaphors for light, and especially in the New Testament. And Jesus is called the light of the world. He is the primary title. He's given the primary title of a light. And we are, well, let's call it little lights. We reflect light here. But instead of going into the great deal about all the different ways that light is used in the New Testament, we just don't have that time here. Let me just tell you primarily what Jesus is saying here. Basically what Jesus is saying here. He's saying that we are God's primary means of revealing himself to the world. If we are as salt, God's enrichment, we are as light, God's enlightenment, displaying Christ to the world. And we do that, Jesus says, by doing good works. Now it's interesting, he likens us to a city on a hill. And that's really kind of a picture of the church, you know, unable to be hidden because of its overwhelming and obvious presence in the landscape. And maybe it's a stretch, but you know, the only way a city can be seen at night is when the lights are burning brightly in those homes. And likewise, each of us contributes to a greater display of Christ when we are working together toward that end. Lee's classroom this year is, they've picked up the theme of stars. And if you go in there, there's stars everywhere. And it's very interesting that her job share partner is not a Christian, but she's managed to make all the stars the Star of David. It was easier to cut them out than to create regular stars. Very interesting. But Lee made a banner for the class, a really big banner. I was going to show you a picture of it, but just didn't have time. And the banner says this: together we shine brighter. Together we shine brighter. And that is true for us as a church. When we work together as a church, as a body, we shine the love of God more brightly to those around us. Over the summer, one of the things that God has really been impressing upon me is this idea, this area of working together, being a community, ourselves a community. And I'm convinced that the best way that we can grow is to grow together. Together grow. Yeah, you know, we grow individually, but I think we grow more healthy, we grow stronger when we do it together, when we live life together, when we serve together, when we worship together, when we minister together, when we learn together. One of the best ways that we can display Christ is by ministering to the world together. For 18 years, Leanne, she served as a teacher over at Lake Hills Elementary School in Bellevue. She's since then moved on to another school. But back in 2006, there was a small group of Christians who wanted to make a difference in the community around that school. And so they started out by doing these before and after school programs for the kids. And 5 years later, it is a full-blown city on the hill to that community. In 2010, the Seattle Times wrote an article about this ministry called Jubilee Outreach. And let me read some of that article to you. It's very, I read it and it just really, because it's in my own neighborhood, because Leanne is really attached to it, it was very emotional for me. So I apologize if I break down even reading it, because it's very good. And this is an article about Jubilee Reach Center and what they are doing in the community over there. It says, before there was Jubilee Reach Center, there was a sidewalk in front of Bellevue's Lake Hills Elementary School. Kids showed up as early as 6 a.m., dropped off in the dark by parents hurrying to early work shifts. There the children waited, sometimes as many as 10, sitting under a breezeway or chasing each other for up to an hour, alone in the cold, dark, and wet. The school tried opening its cafeterias at 7:30 a.m. It wasn't nearly enough. Parents sometimes sat in cars with their kids until somebody on the staff arrived and let them sit in the school as any entryway. Up to 25 kids often waited for the cafeteria to open. In 2005, when Jubilee was still just an idea, its leaders asked the principal how they could help. Her response was swift, a program to get those kids somewhere safe and warm where adults could keep an eye on them and keep them busy with homework or games. A year later, the idea became reality. Jubilee was born as one of First Presbyterian Church of Bellevue's biggest ongoing community projects. What began with a commitment by church leaders to serve their community has bloomed into the center, a nonprofit with programs that now serve 700 families with help from 500 volunteers recruited through a network of local churches and social service agencies. In just 4 years, many of its constituents agree. Jubilee has redefined the modern church safety net and the way social service agencies can serve as a community. Or serve a community. The needs are great in a city where at last count, this is Bellevue, 33% of its residents were foreign-born, the state's highest. And the Lake Hills neighborhood is one of the city's most diverse. Of the 500 or so students at Lake Hills Elementary, 60% speak a language other than English at home, and 66% qualify for free or reduced price lunch. Jubilee, housed in a rambling two-story building a block from the school, seeks to identify holes in the system and come up with programs to fill them. A computer class for parents who didn't know how their kids were doing in school. Parents graduate with a free computer. A dental van, originally serving kids and now treating parents without health care. A coffee hour giving isolated moms a way to connect. During the school year, Jubilee opens at 6 a.m. and soon bustles with energy. Sleepy-eyed kids slurp up bowls of Apple Jacks or Fruit Loops, then rush off to play the board game, mousetrap, or paint ceramic tiles. Some bounce around on pogo sticks while one boy begs program director Ms. Marty Taylor to use the computer room. In the afternoon, kids from Lake Hills, plus another elementary and two middle schools, fill up on homework snacks like puzzle soup. Somebody knows what that is here. Then head to one-on-one tutoring or homework sessions overseen by volunteers. Excuse me if it's really long, but I'm going to keep going here. From my experience of living in Bellevue and teaching in Bellevue since the early 80s, I knew there were resources in the community and caring people, says former principal Judy Buckmaster, who was at Lake Hills when Jubilee began. I'd always thought, how could I reach out to these people and tap into that group? This was the answer. To know Jubilee, you must know First Presbyterian Church. To know the church, you must know Scott Dudley. Dudley is the voice, the youthful face, and the spiritual force behind First Presbyterian. The senior pastor is not a not-so-senior 49 with three kids, ages 10 and under, easygoing, quick with a quip. He wears jeans unless it's Sunday. Meet him away from the church spotlight, and pastor of 4,000 people is not the first description that comes to mind. But spend time with Dudley, and you'll find out Jesus changed his life. He wants the world to know how great Jesus is. But the man with a doctorate in English prefers to show, not tell. His church is evangelical, but avoids preachy pamphlet pushing. He encourages parishioners to do work that prompts the question, why? Meaning, why are you doing this? The answer is Jesus. The answer is Jesus, Dudley says. We'd rather provoke the question, explains. Shoving something down someone's throat never works. If they ask the question, no one feels oppressed by that. In 2005, First Presbyterian Church was in the midst of celebrating its 50th anniversary with a year of service in honor of Jubilee, a Christian concept in which slaves and prisoners are freed and debts are forgiven. The church was thinking big. Parishioner Brent Christie also was searching for a new home for the Eastside Academy, a Christian high school for at-risk teens. He found an old school near Lake Hills Elementary, but it seemed too big for the small academy. Christie, Dudley, and other church leaders hatched the plan for Jubilee. They developed a mission statement that reads, bring Jesus' healing, build community, transform lives. But they remained mindful of Buckmaster and other school administrators who made it clear Jubilee was not to be an evangelical center. The church wrapped the Jubilee project into an ambitious capital campaign to raise $14 million to pay for the rebuilding, to, to, to pay for the building, rebuild the church property, to house the East Side Academy, and build a school in Rwanda for street kids. Unlike other capital campaigns, the ripple effect was devoted to helping people outside the church. The response was overwhelming, $16 million raised. Dudley says it comes down to this bedrock belief: a church should bless the community it's a part of. I just want to tell you a couple of stories real quick here. And I share these only because it is an example of what salt looks like and what light looks like in our world by a church that is doing some great things. The call came from Lake Hills Elementary to Reverend Tom Brewer. Tom Brewer is the guy, if you guys go to Sunday school over the summer, he was the principal teacher for that series that you guys were watching over Sunday school, that Old Testament series, or I mean the Synoptic Gospels series. A little boy had mentioned that there was no water at his house. The school was asking Brewer if he would accompany a Spanish-speaking worker to make a house call. When they arrived, they found five families living in one house. The landlord had taken their money and not paid the bills. They lived without water for 10 days, and the stench was unbelievable. One woman had a year-old baby, but no diapers and no formula. They got to work. Brewer persuaded the city of Bellevue to turn the water back on. Formula and diapers were delivered, and in tears, the mother thanked him and called it a miracle. I could go on and on. It's getting long, but it is amazing. I'll read this last thing to you. It says, Tammy, I can't even pronounce her last name, a single mom of four, knows it to be true. One day, she couldn't pick up her kids right after school. She'd heard about Jubilee Reach and parents' meetings and told her kids to walk over and wait outside for her. When she arrived, her kids were inside drinking hot cocoa. A volunteer handed her paperwork for the after-school program. People were respectful when she told them she was Muslim, she says. Her 7-year-old, a Tanner who speaks Arabic at home, was struggling in ESL classes. Jubilee gave him a tutor, and by the end of the school year, he no longer needed ESL classes. 11-year-old Aaron was part of the kids' group that sang "How Sweet It Is to Be Loved by You" to donors at a May fundraiser for Jubilee. Raising kids the right way alone is hard, but her kids love Jubilee. And she adds, there's no way you don't feel welcome there. It's like your home. And that's salt and light. That's the salt and light that we can be. I'm not suggesting that Faith Bible Church ought to be like this necessarily. Every church has its own ways and its own unique calling to be a light in this world. And I don't know what that is. I don't know what that looks like for us. But I know that we can be a city on the hill here in some way, in some fashion. And I look forward to just working. I mean, I think working with some people who have that mind for that kind of a thing. How can we be here, a commuter church, be a light where we are here? That's a tough thing to do, but I do believe God has called us to do that as lights. Because together, remember, together we shine more brightly. I could add a few more things, but I think you see where I'm getting at here. There is a command here that Jesus gives. He says, just as salt can lose our flavor, we as lights can lose. We can hide our light. And I'll say it again. Jesus says, don't hide your light, but let it shine. You know, we all face that temptation to want to hide our lights. And I have to confess that when I worked years ago in the secular world, I used to attend a Bible study at work. And I was very afraid to, I'm confessing here, I was very afraid to let my light shine there. That I was afraid that, you know, people might find out that, you know, equate me with some radical Jesus freak, and I would, you know, close doors with some of the friends and colleagues that I worked with there. And so I would carry my Bible to the study with the cover faced in so that the outside wouldn't be seen, because I was afraid. Now, I think that's just so silly now that I look back on it, because there were people there at that work who needed to see the light. And I had the light, but I was hiding it. Years later, and actually this is just last year, I met a woman at a Starbucks. She was working there after our company had moved off to New York. And she was working there, and we caught up very quickly in a very short time. And when I told her that I was a pastor, she said, I knew there was something different about you. And I took that as a compliment. But as I began thinking about it, the sad thing is that she didn't know why I was different. She didn't know the source of my difference. And I am just so thankful that she knows now. Jesus says, don't hide your light. Let it shine. Now, what is the ultimate purpose for shining our lights in this world? And we'll find it in verse 16. He says, let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. The ultimate purpose for shining is that the world may see us and glorify God. That is our mission, that the world may see us and glorify God. Now, the implication here is that people know that our good works, that our salt and light, are a result of a relationship with God. A person can do very, very nice things. They can be very good. But if the source is unknown, really, who gets the praise? I'm not suggesting that we don't compliment one another. I think that's a good thing. But ultimately, it is God who should receive the praise and the glory. Now, it's interesting that sometimes we see the opposite happen. Christians do good work, and it leads to persecution and criticism. That's certainly true in the early church. You can read it many times in Peter's writings, but it's true today too. And yet, I think as much criticism as the church receives today, there has not been more of an outpouring of God's love by the church in my lifetime than there is today. People are giving and helping to defeat the struggles of this life more than ever. Relief efforts worldwide are largely spearheaded by Christian organizations. The salt and light of those efforts are seen in compassion and mercy being shown to people who are helpless. People are literally tasting God in the form of food and water. They're literally seeing God in the form of people working together to shine brightly for him. Why then is it that despite all these efforts, that the church continues to be criticized, to receive ridicule? And I think there are a number of reasons, but I think the main reason is this: hypocrisy. Hypocrisy. And in the coming weeks, you're going to see that Jesus is going to address this issue of hypocrisy. Saying one thing, but being different inside. Looking good on the outside, but not so good on the inside. And every act of hypocrisy by a so-called Christian, it cuts down Jesus' reputation, knocks down the efforts and derails the efforts of Christians around the world. And when Jesus gives this warning that when salt loses its flavor, it really is good for nothing, except to be thrown out and trampled on. And that's what the world is doing when it sees hypocrisy. It sees the church and it just tramples on it. It's not as though we need to be perfect though, right? Nobody's perfect. The issue of hypocrisy isn't that we do something wrong. The issue comes into play when we judge other people with an air of pride, self-righteousness, and we hold them to a standard that they don't even have. And then we fall. And then we bring judgment upon ourselves. And the world calls us hypocrites. God is the judge. And we have to be careful not to let our lights become daggers of judgment. So why is hypocrisy so difficult? Why is it difficult for anyone, really? How do we carry out our ministry of salt and light? How do we accomplish this mission to glorify God without being derailed by hypocrisy? And the answer is found in our means. Third point, our means. And that is a changed heart. In these following verses, Jesus begins to introduce a new segment in his teaching. And he wants to show that the Old Testament law, with all its rules and regulations, are more than just outward actions. He begins to tell them that there must be a work in our hearts as well. In fact, the inside must drive the outside. Our good deeds cannot be sustained. Listen up. Our good deeds cannot be sustained. Our salt and our light cannot be sustained by merely trying to gut it out and do good things. In time, what's really inside will get out. And if the inside is rotten, it will result in hypocritical actions. The means of to sustained ministry and mission must ultimately come not from working on our behaviors, but working on our hearts. And the way Jesus gets this idea across is by first asserting that he is the fullness of the law and the prophets. In other words, the Old Testament. Let's read verses 17 and 18. I think you might be getting tired. I'm going to have you stand up and read this with together. Verses 17 and 18. Let's read this. Do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them. For truly I tell you, until heaven and earth disappear, not the smallest letter, not the least stroke of a pen, will by any means disappear from the law until everything is accomplished. All right, have a seat. Jesus didn't come to throw out the Old Testament. He didn't come to start all over again. He came, in his words, to fulfill them. And what that means is Jesus came to provide full meaning of the law and the prophets. He came to deliver them in their fullness, not in the shallow meaning that was being taught by the scribes and the Pharisees who emphasized works, outward works. Jesus says that sure enough, look, the smallest letter, every stroke of the pen will be accomplished, but not the way you've been taught. And here Jesus is raising the bar. He's raising it big time. And we're going to see in the coming weeks that Jesus is going to make it a little bit harder for us, demanding righteousness, not on the outside only, but on the inside. And so he moves from bringing the full meaning of the law and the prophets to requiring the fullness of the law in us. In us. Verses 19 and 20. I'll read it for us. Therefore, anyone who sets aside one of the least of these commands and teaches others accordingly will be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever practices and teaches these commands will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. For I tell you that unless your righteousness surpasses that of the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, you will certainly not enter the kingdom of heaven. And Jesus here warns against setting aside any of the laws by avoiding their deeper meaning and application, and commands those who live and strive to live in the deeper meaning of the law, those who live on the inside out, he commends those. That is followed then by a demand for righteousness that exceeds that of the Pharisees and scribes, meaning that of just behavior only. Now, there's a great deal of theology that can be pulled out of this verse regarding Jesus' words here, and you'll find it in Paul's writings all over the place. And Paul, really, he strikes theological chords with the words of Jesus here, but really, it's beyond the scope of this time, the scope of this message, to go into the theology of all that. It's very deep, very rich, very meaningful, and very valuable. But we just simply don't have time here. I'm simply peering down over the passage and the larger flow of Jesus' words here and suggesting that Jesus is most interested here in a change of heart. One cannot enter the kingdom of heaven by works. There must be a deeper change in the heart. And when it comes to carrying out our ministry of salt and light, I will say it again. It is not possible to sustain that ministry without our hearts being refined and renewed along the way. That is Jesus' call for you and me, to minister as salt and lights in this world in order to bring glory to God. This is only accomplished and sustained through God's working in our hearts, not through gutting it out on our own strength. And my challenge for us this morning is simply this. Where are you and I being called to be salt and light? Jesus said, a lamp gives light to all who are in the house. Who is in our house? Who are those closest to us that need to see the light? For someone somewhere, you and I might be the only light that they have. I want to close with a story I heard not too long ago. Some of the guys in my guys group know this story. We've seen this before. It's about a grocery bagger named Johnny. And it's an inspiring story that I cannot tell nearly as well as John Ortberg, who tells the story in a series that we were going through with the guys. And so I'm going to let John Ortberg tell the story here on the video. So he's going to tell the story, and then we're going to go ahead and close in a song following that. So let's take a listen.